Welcome to the Real Self University podcast. I'm Eva Shea, your host and director of practice development at Real Self.
My guest today on the Real Self University podcast is Dr. Joseph Franklin, and you're based in Cary, North Carolina. Can you tell us about your practice?
Yes. So I am in the Raleigh area of North Carolina, for those people who don't know the triangle. My practice at the office is predominantly cosmetic, even though I still do breast reconstruction. And one day a week, I'm at the Duke Raleigh Wound Center. So I get a little bit of variety from that as well.
And so your current space is pretty small. You're in a solo practice. Who else is on your team?
So we have an esthetician, Becca, and we have a nurse, Amy, who's here one day a week. And then we have front desk people and then the people who do my marketing.
And how long have you been on your own there?
For about a year and a half.
Okay. So I think you said you've been in practice for 15 years. Can you just take us back a little bit through where you've been and what you've done since you got going?
So I went to medical school at East Carolina and ended up doing residency in Greenville as well at Vidant. I went to the University of Tennessee for plastics, and then two of the plastic surgeons in Greenville where I had trained said, hey, do you want to come back and go into practice with us? So that's how I ended up back in Greenville at East Carolina for about 7 or 8 years when I first came back. It was a great location because it was busy. It was a level one trauma center. So it was very good as a first job because there's so much experience getting to know that kind of stuff. After about 7 years, I made the decision to move to the Raleigh area just for a change of scenery. My friends and extended family live here, and so I moved to this area. I was initially in a bigger practice when I first moved to town to North Raleigh. And then for the past year and a half, almost 2 years, I've been by myself in solo practice in Cary.
So you've kind of seen everything inside one state, like you just took a tour around the state and checked out all the practices.
Well, exactly. Well, and plus I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, but I grew up in a little town called Murphy. So there's a saying in North Carolina, Murphy to Mania. Murphy's on one end of the state, Mania's on the other end. So I've kind of seen North Carolina from one end to the other.
And how do the patients change from each market? Like what have you seen as far as differences in them?
When I was in Greenville, it was super interesting because we were really, really busy during the summer. In Raleigh, we're crickets during the summer. And when I first moved to town, I was like, what happened? Where did everyone go? The idea was because we were so close to the coast, people would come up from the beach areas to have their cosmetic surgery done during the summer so they could get away from the tourist. On the flip side, everyone here goes to the beach for the summer, so it's really slow. So that's been the most interesting thing to me just with regards to when patients come to the office, because summers around here are actually kind of slow, whereas they used to be really slow starting September. So that's kind of been the biggest shift. The demographics of what people like are very different. When I lived in Greenville, the population was a little bit heavier, so I did very little liposuction. In this area, because people are much more fit, liposuction is a lot more common. So it's just interesting, based on different areas of the same state, what people present with.
And then you've also been in a really big practice and now a really small one. What are the key differences that you've noticed between those two spaces?
Being in a big practice is ridiculously interesting because there's so many people involved. And so you get all these great ideas just kind of running around all over the place, which is wonderful. It's interesting, though, with the COVID-19, this novel coronavirus, I'm actually very thankful to be in a very small practice. So we've been very nimble. We can move around. We initially thought before the American Society of Plastic Surgeons suggested that we halt elective cases, we were planning on saying, hey, we've got some time, everyone's got some downtime, come on in, have your procedure done. So this was like on a Thursday, by Friday, everyone's telling us to close down. So then we quickly switched from doing that to, hey, we can provide urgent care. So for example, if I'm at one of the hospitals and I'm on call, I typically get called in for lacerations, for small burns, for hand injuries, for facial fractures. So what the emergency departments are doing now, instead of seeing people in their emergency rooms for those, they're actually just sending them to the office now, which has been great, just to try to decompress some of their stuff. So I've been fortunate to be small enough to be able to do that. I don't think that would have been possible in a big organization.
And I'm sure that your relationships had a lot to do with being able to do that quickly too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So they already knew you. And did you just call them up and say, send them over?
We did a little bit of both. We did Instagram because we have about 13,000 Instagram followers. So Instagram's been a quick uptick. And then I just called my friends for emergency medicine physicians. I'm like, hey, I know you guys are getting a little overwhelmed. with just the volume of people they've been trying to see and trying to keep out of the hospitals, I'm like, hey, all the plastic surgeons in town are trying to do this. So we're available. If you need us, just call us. We were fortunate. We were the first one to do it, but everyone else has kind of picked up on it as well.
Well, you're leading by example. How much exposure for the cosmetic practice do you suppose you've gained then through that strategy? And it wasn't a strategy. It was just the right thing to do.
I don't know. I think that's probably going to be 6 months from now when that kind of those numbers kind of come back in. You know, it is interesting. Yeah. I had a school teacher came in the other day for Botox. And she's like, I'm doing all of these virtual classes. And she's like, I started seeing my forehead. So that's totally interesting when you think about what things are changing as this moves forward. Interesting to see what happens in 6 months down the line to see if any of those, because when I first started practice, I got a lot of people that have repaired like a facial laceration or some trauma on. And then a year or so later, people are like, oh, you took care of my grandson, or you took care of my daughter, or you took care of whoever. So they come back and see you.
Did you always want to be a surgeon?
No, I didn't want to be a surgeon. Well, I wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an architect. So it was one of the three. And then I decided, well, attorneys have to read too much, so I don't want to do that. And like, I wasn't sure I could figure out how much concrete to add to how much steel to keep a building from falling over. So that kind of, that went out. So I went to medical school to be a psychiatrist. The first year of med school, we had a party just to all get to know each other. And so we dressed up as what we didn't want to be. And I dressed up as a surgeon. So yeah, really not what I was planning to do. But then when I got into plastics, I was like, yeah, that's it.
So there must have been an experience or, you know, a singular moment, probably wasn't like a minute, but what was it that made you change your mind specifically? A person or an experience?
I think probably plastics is the only way where you get to make something out of nothing. I think that's great. With regards to some other professions like general surgery, there are just not that many sexy ways to take out a gallbladder. You know, it's just doesn't happen. But I think probably the biggest thing for me as far as a turning point, we had done a craniosynostosis case, so on a child who had just a misshapen head. And so immediately after surgery, those kids are really, really swollen. They're in the ICU managing all of their vital signs and so forth. And so I ran into this kid's dad in the hallway. I'm like, hey, I think your son's going to do great. You know, I know this is a big thing for him to get over, but I think he's going to do spectacular. And he said, hey, you know, at the end of the day, I just want him to look normal like you. I was like, that's the reason. That's the reason we do it.
Mm-hmm. It is. Fast forward to today. What do you love about the patients that you're seeing now in the way that that first one moved you?
I think with regards to everyone wants to be their best self. And I think it's become super, super interesting that people are trying to invest in themselves a little bit more. Plastic surgery is never going to be at the forefront of everyone's to-do list. But I think when people finally get to the point like, hey, I'm really interested in having these little crow's feet taken care of. Oh, I've really been uncomfortable with my breast for all these years. Once people kind of get the idea of like, hey, you can do this. You know, this is not just for the rich and famous. This is for everyone. I think that has kind of changed what people see. The one thing that I've been trying to be really careful with is to make sure that we're not exclusionary. I think that is the worst thing the plastic surgeons have tried to do over the years. It's like, oh, we're so special. We're so wonderful. You can't see us. I think that's absolutely the wrong idea. I think anyone who has a question, anyone who has an idea should have the opportunity to come in. I'm like, hey, let's talk about this. Maybe this is something we can afford. Maybe it's something you can finance. You know, but I think everyone needs to have that opportunity. So I think we've done a humongous disservice to our own profession by trying to be so exclusive.
To me, it sounds like the answer to the question that I should have asked you, which was, what is your brand? How do you think about marketing? And what's the brand of your practice? So would you say that's accurate, that that's how you approach your marketing?
Yeah, our slogan is reveal your best self. You know, because what is one person's best self is not someone else's. You know, I can remember years ago, a lady came to see me who had had gastric bypass, lost a pile of weight. And she came in, and so I was kind of doing this one over in my head. I'm like, okay, she probably needs her breast lifted. She probably needs a tummy tuck, maybe her inner thighs. Why does she need a facelift? So I'm kind of going over this whole gamut of things in my head. When she came in, she's like, hey, I want my arms done. I live at the beach and I hate these flappy arms. So what was my expectation of her walking in the front door was very different than what she expected from me. I was like, oh, okay, we can do that. So I think it's just kind of people where they are. What do they bring to the table?
And that, does that translate to your consultations? Do you let them say what they want before you ever?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Classic example, I had a lady a number of years ago who came in for breast augmentation, beautiful woman, that had this ginormous mole on her cheek. And I wanted to say, you know, people are really not looking at your boobs. You know, why don't we take this thing off your cheek? And so eventually after breast augmentation, I'm like, are you interested in having that thing taken off? She's like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. So I think at some point you don't want to lead people into things, but you want to kind of, what have you thought about this?
Yeah, that makes sense. I want to pivot a little bit. I noticed on your website that your bio almost led with a commitment to safety, but not in the way that I usually see it. And so you've spent a lot of time in the area of safety, specifically in surgery center inspections. So tell us about that part of your job. I think you said it was your fifth job. What did you mean by that?
No, it's just I wear a lot of different hats. So I can kind of tell you how it started. So I'm a Quad ASF inspector. So Quad A is one of the accreditation organizations for ambulatory surgical facilities. With Quad A, I initially got into it because my business partner at the time wanted me to spy on the neighbors. So he's like, why don't you go become a Quad A inspector and then go check out some of the local practices as they come up for renewals of their inspections? So that was literally the reason I did it, as to his suggestion. What I found is that over the years, the more that I did them, I learned something from every single place I went. I'm like, oh, there's a neat trick. How did you manage to do that? Where do you order something from? So I ended up getting a lot more from the other people than they did from me. With Quad A, the biggest thing for the organization is they're trying to get patient safety. I mean, it's literally a checklist of documents saying, hey, can you safely take care of a patient? Are you credentialed to take care of this patient? And if something crazy happens, can you get them to a higher level of care? That's really what it is. Through the American Society of Plastic Surgery, we're required to have a number of patient safety hours in our continuing medical education. And so performing inspections or actually being inspected is actually one way to get some of those safety.
So where do you see practices usually fail the first time they get inspected? Like they've gone through this whole process of building a surgery center. They've invested a ton of money. It's finally time to get the thumbs up from you. What usually causes them not to make it through the process?
So interestingly enough, if you look at Quad A in particular, probably 95% of practices go through fine. With Quad A, they require 100% compliance with all of their guidelines. So if you don't have all their guidelines done, you just can't pass it. What they've done, interestingly enough, is they literally post online, actually have a printed book of the guidelines. So you literally go page by page and check off the boxes. If there's something which is not done, you have to do it. Occasionally, there are things which can be what's called corrected on site, meaning if they don't have a protocol written or if there's some little hiccup that you can fix it. But that's generally the biggest concern. Occasionally, there are places that just don't have their stuff completely together. And so if I go in to do an inspection, I'm like, hey, you're missing a lot of stuff. So why don't you have me just go through, I can help show you some things you need to fix, and then just request a second survey. So that's generally the way it works. But that's only happened, it's probably 7 years, and it's only happened a couple.
Yeah. So it's not something they should be afraid of, especially if you're going to be their inspector.
Right. Well, I mean, it's one of those things where we're all looking out for the same benefit. We're all trying to take good care of patients. We're all trying to make sure that we don't have some, you know, crazy person in the area who's doing things which are not safe. So the reality is we're all kind of in the same boat. So I'm not going to purposely pass someone just to pass them, but I don't want to fail someone either. So it's literally just going through the checkbox to make sure they buy everything.
And that work takes you all over the country?
It's usually the Southeast. So for Quad A in particular, their primary goal is to have it somewhere within driving distance. Occasionally, there are places that they don't have inspectors or someone's coming up for one kind of last minute. So I'll go into Atlanta, into Tennessee, into South Carolina, and just Virginia. But it's usually stuff which is geographically easy to travel in a car.
And then you said you learn something every time you go. Are you learning from the inside out, sort of how other people run their practices and then able to take that back to your own?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And everyone always has clever little ideas. Like I remember years ago, I had gone to inspect someone just north of Atlanta. And this is when people were still using saline implants. Saline implants and silicone for that matter, do come in different projections so that the same base width of an implant can project three different ways. So this guy had taken three different colors of like Listerine, pink, blue, and yellow, and put in the breast implant so he could show the difference. And I was like, well, that's clever. You know, of course they smelled like Listerine, but the idea was it was just kind of a clever way to do it. So there's something like that I learned on every single inspection. I mean, the last one I did here in town, which was several months ago, I asked him like, oh, by the way, I need a new answering service for the office because ours just wasn't the best. Like, oh, use this one. We picked up the same one they used and it's great. So, I mean, it's just colleagues being colleagues.
And you meet a lot of new people too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's helpful just to call people back and forth too. I mean, I remember I met one of the guys in North Raleigh and then suddenly we found out we had a mutual friend from when I trained. And so, you know, it was just kind of interesting. But then I had a question related to ear, nose, and throat. And so I just texted him the other day because he's ear, nose, and throat plastics, facial plastics. I was like, hey, what do you think about this? So it's good just to some people you wouldn't necessarily interact with outside of doing those inspections.
How long does the inspection usually take for you to complete?
A minimum of 4 hours.
So do you plan to be there for the whole day? And then when you get done early, you just are done?
It kind of depends. Yeah. For repeat inspections, those are generally around 4 hours and they're fairly straightforward. The initial inspections for new offices take longer, but those can take all day.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen anything really crazy in an inspection? Like, this is dangerous?
No. I mean, I've been a couple of places where they just didn't have all their protocols together. I was like, yeah, you're not going to pass. So let's just try to redo this. But nothing, anything so outlandish that you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, no. It's not like restaurant inspections. There's probably no market for a reality TV show of quad ASF inspector going through a surgery center.
Definitely.
No, not that interesting.
No, it'd be one of those things you put on, you know, at 11 o'clock at night so you can fall asleep.
It's good to know. I've heard from a lot of staff that it's a really stressful process. So next time I hear someone say that, I'll actually be able to say, don't worry about it so much. Just check all the boxes.
Right. Well, and it's interesting too, having been on both sides of the fence on this. So I've been in a practice which had an operating room that had to be accredited for the first time. And then I've been an inspector. So it's definitely interesting because it is a little bit nerve-wracking because if you don't pass inspection, then you shouldn't operate. But it literally is one of those things, if you check all the boxes and go through the protocols and have everything written, you're good.
Thank you for shedding some light on that process. I've never heard most of that before. Okay, let's go to another uniqueness about your practice. You have a male patient coordinator. Is he still working for you?
He is so my patient coordinator is currently by.
He's in Dubai? He's stuck there?
He does personal training. So he got this random whim to go to do personal training in Dubai for 3 months. And so getting back in the country has been slightly delayed. So anyway, yes, he's in Dubai. Currently, his sister is filling in as my patient coordinator. So we keep it all in the family.
Okay. It's very rare to see a male patient coordinator in plastic surgery. And I wonder how your patients react and respond to that when he is there and not Dubai.
So Anthony is one of those people universally loved. He's got a great personality. He's just fun. And so people really just enjoy being around him. The same way with his sister. They're both just super likable folks. So they're definitely interesting because people just enjoy chatting with them and being around them and so forth. And I think at the end of the day, it's just about customer service more than anything else. As long as people are happy, you're answering the phone, they're getting their needs met. I think that's probably the biggest thing.
So when you need a chaperone to sit in on a consult with you, do you just use somebody other than him for that?
Yeah, so I'll usually use Becca, who's our esthetician, or Amy, if she's here, our nurse. So it just depends. We kind of shift people depending on the consults to whatever day they're coming in to make sure someone's available.
Has anybody ever complained about having to talk to a male patient coordinator? No.
No.
I'm just looking for controversy here and I'm not finding any.
We're happily a little bit boring.
I mean, in general, my experience has been that plastic surgeons take excellent care of their patients and they don't have issues. But sometimes I ask a question and I get a really crazy answer. So I'm going to keep trying.
Well, I think in this business, the concern is always patient regret. I don't want someone to pay for something, pay for a service, pay for a product, pay for a procedure, and then be unhappy with it. So I am notorious for turning a lot of people, unless they have reasonable expectations, don't want to be a part of it. Because I'm like, if I can't provide the best of care and provide exactly what you want, then I don't do it. I've been doing this long enough. I'd much rather not do something that I think is not going to work well rather than perform something that's not going to live up to their expectations.
Do you find that patients from specific sources are better than others? Like if they're referred by friends? Yeah.
Absolutely. I think education has a tremendous amount to do with it. Raleigh is a weird little bubble in North Carolina because of Research Triangle Park, because of universities like UNC and Duke and NC State and law schools and whatever. This is a ridiculously well-educated area of North Carolina, which is fortunate. Going an hour and a half outside of this little bubble, there are lots of areas which have very low socioeconomic indicators and the education class. When I get some of the people from some of the outlying areas, that sometimes the expectations are very different because they haven't researched things quite as much.
There's also a fairly large military presence in North Carolina, isn't there?
Yes, that tends to be a little bit more coastal. Yeah. So that's Fayetteville and things like that. So I used to see a pretty heavy number of military folks when I lived in Greenville, because that was kind of the easiest kept location for those folks. I don't see as many currently.
Outside of referrals from existing patients, where in your marketing do you find that you see the strongest folks coming through the door?
Word of mouth, by far, because I go to most of the hospitals in the area. A lot of times the nurses will say, oh, I worked with Dr. Franklin in the operating room and he does a really good job, go see him. With regards to social media, Instagram by far is our best. We get a little bit of traction from Facebook, but not really predominantly, but most are attractions from Instagram. I saw a lady last week who wanted breast augmentation and a tummy tuck who literally found us on Instagram. So I think that's really kind of the biggest thing for us. And that tends to work in this area. And in other areas of the state, different things tend to do great. We don't do a lot of Google sponsored ads. We do occasionally because we just really haven't gotten that much traction from those.
You told me earlier you had 13,000 followers on Instagram. Are you doing it yourself?
No, I have people doing that.
Yeah.
I will occasionally post a story. Yeah. Everything else is done through Beam Collective, who is our marketing agency. And they've done a great job because it's much more consistent, because it was so hodgepodge when I was doing it myself. And I was like, look, I'm great. And it was just terrible. So it's like, oh, let someone else take it over. Do their thing.
Is there any social media that you do like to do?
I like Instagram. I have a personal page too that I play with. I don't really do Twitter. It's just not my thing. I think in certain areas, like Karen Horton, who's in San Francisco, is one of the first like Twitter users, you know, in the area, and she's done really well with it. It's just never really hit in this area of the country.
The format of Twitter doesn't lend itself well to patient-doctor interaction either. It's really challenging. So that's part of why it doesn't do well. It's just not set up for that. There's a couple things we ask everyone right now as we kind of wrap up the conversation. And one is really just about what's happening right now. And so I'm curious what the most important thing you've learned has been during the coronavirus situation.
I think the most important thing, which I have realized, is that I'm a little bit of a loner, but I am very social. And this social distancing can be socially isolating if you're not super, super careful. It's been interesting to see. Strangely enough, my neighbor and I have started sharing dinners back and forth. So I will leave something at her door. I'm like, hey, I just left you dinner. She'll leave something at mine just because we're tired of our own cooking, even though we're people who normally go out and stuff a lot. So it's been interesting to get to know my neighbor better just because we're kind of all stuck at home socially distancing. And I think the best thing is, I am so fortunate that the office has stayed open and that I go to the hospital a day or so a week just for interaction with people. Because I talked to a friend of mine who had gone to the grocery store on Sunday the first time in a month because he was working from home. I was like, oh my God, who are you interacting with? Because I would have gone crazy. So that's been the good thing, just to be able to kind of see some people, even though it's very limited, in a mask and so forth.
I agree. Single people have probably had it very, very hard during this time.
Oh, yeah, because I'm single. And I was like, wow, this stinks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm an introvert, too. I enjoy being alone very much, but there is definitely such a thing as too much alone.
Yeah. I agree. Going to be a new normal. Be interesting to see what that is.
The last question we ask everyone on this podcast is, what is your unique superpower? Because everyone actually has one, and we would like to know what yours is.
Unique superpower. I don't know if it's a superpower or a basic belief. I am eternalistically optimistic. I am one of those people's like, hey, this will all get better somehow. This will, you know, and sometimes that's the face of like, I don't know how this is going to work, but somehow we'll just get through it. I think that's probably the best thing right now, because right now so much of the unknown that we're just trying to get through.
Mm-hmm. It's also what great leaders do.
Right.
Thank you for sharing your stories with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Nice to chat with you.
Thanks for listening to the Real Self University podcast. The mission of Real Self is to create a world where every investment in modern beauty is worth it. And Real Self University is here to help aesthetic professionals do just that. The mission of our podcast is to uncover stories and data from our industry's most interesting and successful personalities. If you'd like to be a guest on the Real Self University podcast, have feedback or questions, email university@realself.com. Support us and help us keep this effort going by subscribing to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like more information about becoming Real Self Verified, go to realself.com/network and enter referral code podcast to receive 50% off your first full month of Real Self Spotlights. I'm your host and producer, Eva Shea. Our post-production is by Daniel Cruiser. All of our learning and practice development resources are available on demand at university.realself.com.